Okay, good morning. Good luck. It's great to be back. I apologize for the missed opportunity 2 weeks ago. I was under the weather, and you know, I'm sad. Anyways, people here are sick of hearing me, so it was a good break, I think, for everyone. But now, B'sayat Hashmai, we're back. We'll have our consistency back, and we'll be able to continue learning together. We're learning again the Tshuvas of the Hartzvi. The Sefer Hartzvi was written by Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. You have on the top of your sheet. He lived from 1873 to 1960, and we used to have pictures. Avinom, you stopped bringing the pictures. Yeah, exactly. So we're going to continue in his Tshuvas. By nature, the way we're doing it is we're learning the style of this particular Sefer of Pesach Halacha, because that was the idea to have a Tshuvas here. So the topics are going to be sort of random every week, but we'll try to group them. We're going in order of Shulchan Aruch, and we try to group them a little bit in terms of the actual shit that we're talking about. So today we'll talk a little bit about Inyani Beis HaKnesses. In particular, this is going to sound strange, but Avodah Zarah in a Beis HaKnesses, Avodah Zarah in a shul. First of all, I've been told to announce that everyone is welcome to sit at the tables. The tables are a little longer today, so male and female, welcome at the tables. Nobody's pressured to, but everyone's welcome. Second of all, we thank the anonymous sponsor for this shiur this morning. We appreciate that. And as a kolel, I think the sponsor of our month of learning, Dr. Moshe and Brian DeBenresh, they sponsor the entire month of Shvat, Leila Nishmas Yaakov Kapel Ben Yechiel Tzvi HaKohen. So we have his neshama in mind as we learn. And in particular, this week of learning in the Kollel is sponsored by Danny Javahari in honor of his cousin, Mordechai Javahari, Rabbi Mordechai Javahari. No, that's not just the trick that they got me to say some made-up name. That's actually a real name, and he's a wonderful person, Talmud Chacham, an old chavrus of mine and a friend of mine. And we thank his cousin for the sponsorship in his honor as well. So if you look in the first tshuva that you have on page number one over here, the long tshuva, this is Har Tzvi, Orach Chaim Chelek Aleph, the first volume, Siman Pei Hei, that's 85. So the shaila that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank is dealing with is a very, very interesting one. It's one that, I don't know if it comes up ever. You'll tell me if it's ever come up in this shul, if it's come up in another shul. I know it used to come up, but I don't think it really does anymore. It used to come up in Yeshiva University. I don't know if it was every year or every number of years. But the shaila is as follows. We'll read inside in the very first line. Hashaila. B'komrim ha'nichnasim lebeis ha'knesses me'atzmam v'aleim. Anyone know what the Shin Vav Ayin stands for? Not Shulchan Aruch. Shesi ve'erev. What does that mean? Anyone here ever learn Maseches Erev and Daf Yomi or other places as well? Shesi ve'erev literally is just, it's just a design. It means crisscross. It means crisscross. So this is a Shesi ve'erev. People pronounce it different ways, but that's one way to pronounce it. Shesi ve'erev, crisp and cross, right? Two lines that go across each other. So what's wrong with a guy wearing a crisscross shirt into a shul? Huh? Ah. So the first word was important to know also in order to understand the shaila. Komrim. What are komrim? Priests or a galach, a priest, someone who is part of the church, and he wears around his neck a getchka, right? He wears a cross around his neck. So this individual, this priest, comes into your shul, comes into the shul. Im mechuyavim la'akev aleihem. Do you have to keep them out or tell them to take off their necklace, take off their jewelry? I don't know. Shelo yikansu mishum halab lo savi to'eva el beisecha. Do you have to keep them out of the shul or even kick them out of the shul, remove them from the premises? Why? Because there's an isser of lo savi to'eva el beisecha. So basically, the shaila Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was being asked was that you have some priests or galachim who want to enter your shul. It sounds like they're doing it on their own. We'll talk about that distinction soon, B'li Neder. And they want to come in, and you want to know, are you allowed to let them in? Well, what's the issue with letting them in? He quotes a pasuk here. He's kind of vague otherwise, but he quotes a pasuk, Lo savi to'eva el beisecha. So what's that pasuk talking about? So if you look in the psukim in Parshas Ekev, at the end of Perek Zayin of Dvarim, the psukim tell us about how Kadosh Baruch is going to give our enemies over into our hands, and he's going to give us Eretz Yisrael. And then he commands us in that context to completely obliterate, to completely eradicate all avodah zarah from the land. And at the end of that little paragraph, the Torah says, Lo savi to'eva el beisecha v'yisa cherem kamohu. That's the pasuk that says shaketz to shaketzenu, etc. That avodah zarah is abominable. It's disgusting. It's a disgrace, and we have to get rid of it entirely. So the Torah here tells us a mitzvah losa say.
Literally, don't bring it into your house.
Ah, that's what we're going to talk about in a second. So it's, if we literally translate the pasuk, it says, "Do not bring the abomination into your home." Lo savi, don't bring to'eva, the abomination, which is a reference to avodah zarah, based on the context. That's very clear. El beisecha, into your home. Correct. That's a literal translation. So, I don't know, the simplest way to translate it, as we just said, would imply that there's an Issa D'Oraisa here that we're talking about, no? This priest wants to come into our shul, which is a base HaKnesses, it's a bias, it's a home, and he wants to wear his getchka, his cross around his neck. A cross is certainly we think of as Avodah Zarah. I mean, Christianity is certainly Avodah Zarah, so cross is the object of his Avodah Zarah, and he wants to bring it into your home, Lo Sabi Toeva El Beisecha. That's the simple idea, but Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank basically has such a wonderful tshuva. It's so clear and organized, and we're going to go through the Psach Halacha in such an interesting fashion. We're going to actually step a little bit out of order, but basically we're going to keep the same Seder Advarim that Rav Tzvi Pesach has over here. But he says we really have to consider three things over here, okay? Lo Sabi Toeva El Beisecha includes three things. Lo Sabi, what does it mean to do a hava? What does it mean to bring something in? How do you define that in halacha, bringing something in? Remember, in our case, did the rabbi bring the cross into the shul? No. A priest walked into the shul. Sounds like the beginning of a bad joke. But a priest and a rabbi walk into a shul, and the question is that lo sabi? Well, we have to define lo sabi. What does that mean, lo sabi? Toeva. What's considered a toeva? Well, that was easy. Toeva means it's abominable. It's clear from context that means avodah zarah. So a cross is avodah zarah, right? Not so posh, not so simple. We have to discuss that as well. Is a cross really considered a chetza, an object of avodah zarah? And thirdly, el beisecha. What's considered a house? It's certainly called a beis hakneses. A shul is called a beis hakneses. A beis medrash is called a beis hamedrash. But is that the same halachic definition in terms of bias for this iser of lo sabi toev el beisecha? Or is there maybe some distinction lahalacha in terms of that definition as well? So let's try to define all three of those parts of the pasuk. Lo sabi toeva El Beisecha. But we'll start with the second one just because it helps us get into the sugya a little bit more clearly. If you look in the source sheet in the first tshuva, it starts with Os Beis. So it's sort of the third paragraph. You see it starts with words of Achshav. So it's the second thing where Tzvi Pesach deals with. So it's the first thing we'll talk about. So he quotes here our Rambam. The Rambam, in his Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvos Los Essay, the Rambam wrote a Sefer HaMitzvos where he collected all 613 mitzvos, positive commandments and negative commandments. So in the negative commandments, Chafei 25, as well as in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, he quotes over here Zayin Beis, Perek Zayin Halacha Beis. The Rambam seems to very simply and very clearly understand the pasuk not the way we just said. He seems to understand the pasuk means something entirely different. The Rambam says, Avodas kochavim, in the second line here in Os Beis, Avodas kochavim, idolatry, umisham sheha, and the things which are used for it, vitikroves shela, objects of Avodah Zarah, v'chol anase b'shvila, anything made to facilitate Avodah Zarah, aser behana'a. What does it mean, aser behana'a? You can't derive benefit. Correct. You can't derive benefit. You can't derive benefit from the Avodah Zarah. Very good. Shenemar. What does the pasuk say? Where do you know that you can't derive benefit? Lo sabi toeva el beisecha. What does the Rambam seem to be understanding? The pasuk doesn't mean what we thought it meant literally. The pshuto shel mikra, as we say, the literal definition of the pasuk that we thought it to mean. Don't bring avodas into your house. No, the pasuk means, and I guess this was just an example of a hana'a, of a benefit. Don't gain benefit, don't derive pleasure or benefit from Avodah Zarah, from idolatry. So the Rambam says it's not really, strictly speaking, limited to or even specifically related to bringing into your home. Bringing into your home might be an example of a time you can get hana from it. You can get Avodah Zarah hana from something that's in your home, that's true. But the Torah didn't mean that the way it sounds. The Torah actually meant that there's an iser to derive benefit from the Avodah Zarah. If you look in the sources, so Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank quotes the Arayim, but you'll see we have other sources for this as well, who disagrees with this. But like the Rambam said, that there's only an Isser Hana over here. The Ramban says this in his explanation on the Torah. The Ritva says this in Maseches Avodah Zarah and Daf Tesvav. And that seems to be an understanding of the Pasuk. The Pasuk doesn't really mean there's a literal Isser, a literal prohibition against bringing things into your home that are Avodah Zarah, but rather there's an Isser to derive benefit to gain Hana from Avodah Zarah. The problem is that in addition to the fact that the words of the pasuk actually sound like it literally means lo sabi toeva el beisecha, you can't bring it into your home, there's also a Mishnah Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Aleph Amar Aleph, on 21a, the Mishnah Avodah Zarah says that there's an iser to bring Avodah Zarah into a Jewish-owned property, and the Mishnah says, the pasuk, the source is, guess, our pasuk. So the Rambam might have an additional level of interpretation here, that not only is it aser to bring Avodah Zarah into your home, but it's also usher to derive benefit. You're not allowed to get any pleasure from the Avodah Zarah. That could be another level of interpretation in this pasuk. But how do you get around the fact that the pasuk actually says, don't bring it to your home? And additionally, the Mishnah actually learns from that pasuk there's an Isser to bring it into your home. So the Ritva tries to answer this. Remember, the Ritva was like the Rambam. The Ritva thought that the Isser of the pasuk really means you can't gain benefit, not necessarily bring it into your home, but you can't gain benefit. So the Ritva tries to explain, no, there's really only an Isser Darabanan to bring into your home. So funny. No, the pasuk says, don't bring it into your home. The Isser Darais on a biblical level, that means you can't get Hana. And the Isser Darabanan is what the pasuk really sounds like. It means bring it to your home. Such a funny, it's kind of flipping the script in that way. Very strange. But that's what the Ritva tries to understand. The Urayim, as you see in the source sheet, the Urayim One of the Rishonim, also Tosfos and Maseches Avodah Zarah, the Rashba, the Ravid, the Ran, they all understand the Pasuk the way we understood it originally. Lo sabi toei ve'al be'secha. It means you can't bring Avodah Zarah into your own. Now, just so we know, what lies at the core, at the background of this whole dispute, is really the fact that there are two psukim which seem to not really jive or be repetitive or work in tandem, but you have to figure out how they work in tandem. The Pasuk that we quote was Lo sabi toei ve'al be'secha, but there's also a Pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, which says lo yidbak biyadcha min ha'uma, that you can't hold on to any of the avodah zarah. When you've destroyed the avodah zarah town, we've destroyed all of the worshippers in the town, you can't hold on to any of the avodah zarah. So what do these two isurim mean? One says don't bring it into your home, one says don't hold on to it. Make sure you cleanse yourself entirely of any chefts, of any object of avodah zarah. So the question is, are there two distinct separate isurim here? One is to gain hana'a, benefit. One is to bring it to your home. Or is the Torah doubly repeating the fact that you can't gain any benefit? One, it says lo yidbach biyach min amuma. Two, it says that you can't bring it to your home. That's sort of what lies at the core of what the Parshanim and the Poskim are arguing about, what the Rishonim are arguing about in terms of the Isser over here. Rav Beryl Soloveitchik had a very interesting question. Rav Beryl Soloveitchik, just so we know the family tree a little bit, so we all heard of Rav Soloveitchik from Yeshiva University from Boston. That's the Rav, as we know him. Okay. His father was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was the son of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was the son of Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the same name as, no, my son, Yosef Dov Steinmetz. Also the Rav, also our Rav Soloveitchik. The same name, that's who Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik was named for, his great-grandfather, the Beis Halevi. So the Beis Halevi had Rav Chaim had Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and that's the Rav. Rav Chaim had another son also, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and more than one, but Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and the Brisker Rav, Rav Velvula Soloveitchik. The Brisker Rav escaped during the war. A lot of his family did not. He escaped during the war. He went to Eretz Yisrael. Some of his sons came along with him. Some of his children didn't make it. His wife didn't make it. But he escaped. He made it to Eretz Yisrael. So one of his sons was Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik also. He was called Rav Beryl Soloveitchik. Beryl is a name for a Dov. It's a nickname for a Dov. So Rav Beryl Soloveitchik was one of the mamshichim, one of the people who continued the legacy of Brisker Torah in Yerushalayim during the Brisker Rav's lifetime, his father, and afterwards. You've heard maybe of Rav David Soloveitchik, who just passed away about a year and a half ago. That was the youngest son that survived and made it through. Actually, maybe Rav Meir Soloveitchik was younger. I don't remember the ages, but he's definitely lived the longest, Rav David Soloveitchik. So Rav Beryl Soloveitchik was one of the Brisker Rav's sons. So he had a very fascinating question. These kind of questions, depending on your style, it bothers you, doesn't bother you. It wouldn't bother me if it doesn't bother you, but it's an interesting question anyways. We know the story in Sefer Bereishis about Rachel, that she steals her father Lavan's idols, right? What happens? She knows her father Lavan is an Ovid Avodah Zarah. She thinks it's despicable, disgusting. So she steals the truffim. She steals the Avodah Zarah. We know it doesn't end well, the story. But she steals it and she hides it under herself in order to keep him away from doing Avodah Zarah. So the question Rebaral asks is, how is that allowed? What was Rachel doing by definition when she took the Avodah Zarah objects? Taking ownership of them, taking possession of them. So she was maybe Toeva El Beisa. She brought the Toeva, she brought the Avodah Zarah into her home, into her person, into her possession. Isn't that an issue? Isn't that an issue? So what do you think? First of all, it might not bother you. Why? Because we're asking questions about Rachel from before the Torah came. Okay, so that's a style. The Rishonim certainly do work on questions like that. Some people are not as bothered by those type of questions. But why doesn't this bother you? Why is this not a good kasha? Or it is a good kasha. What's the good answer, though?
They were entrenched and being removed.
They were being removed. Ah, excellent. Meaning, what does Lo Sabi Toei Ve'al Be'Secha means? It means don't maintain Avodah Zarah. Don't hold on to it. Don't bring it to your home. Don't incorporate it into your life. Taking Avodah Zarah in order to throw it in the trash can, taking Avodah Zarah in order to burn it, in order to stop someone else from doing Avodah Zarah, that's not Lo Sabi Toei Ve'al Be'Secha. That's destroy Avodah Zarah. It's a good thing. That was a mitzvah. So of course Rachel wasn't committing this aver when she did so. Some of the Achronim do give that answer. Rav Beryl didn't say this answer. He just posed the question. But I think that probably is the right direction in terms of the answer. Okay, so Rav Tzipa Zachir here. Yeah. He was allowed? No. One of the seven mitzvahs B'nai Noach. B'nai Noach have seven mitzvahs. We have 613. B'nai Noach have seven mitzvahs. One of the seven is Avodah Zarah. They're not allowed to worship idols. So Lavan was not allowed to do so. Rav Tzvi Pesach here basically concludes that if we assume like the Ramban and the other Rishonim, the Rambam here, that there's an Isser, if we assume like the Yireim, I should say, if we assume like the Yireim, the Tosfos, the Rashba, the Ravid, the Ran, all of those Rishonim, So we understand there's an iser hava'a. There actually is an iser not only of getting hana, there's also an iser of deriving benefit from avodah zarah. Additionally, there's an iser of bringing avodah zarah into our homes, so then you start with a problem in our shaila. Remember, this guy wants to come in, this galach wants to come in with the getchka around his neck into our shul. Isn't that lo sabi toeva el beisecha? So if lo sabi toeva el beisecha means there's no iser to bring into your home, literally, it means you can't get hana, so if there's no deriving of benefit over here, it's not an issue. But if you assume like the Rishonim, which is the Pshuto Shel Mikra, that there is also an iser to bring the Avodah Zarah into your home, then isn't this also an issue? The Avodah Zarah is coming into our property, we're allowing this non-Jewish galach, this priest, to walk in with the getchka on his neck, that's going to be an issue. So if that's Pesach Frank, deals with the Shaila, yeah. Yeah, technically speaking, you're saying it wasn't in a home. Well, yeah, but...
So the priest is not
incorporating the Matzah. Understood. So that's also a good point. Yeah. So he's going to say something about that in a second. Very good. So the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank basically says, even if you assume there's an Isser over here, our case is different. There's two reasons. One of them was what Matt said, and something else before that. He quotes a Tshuva Sarash, but you have it here in source in the first Tshuva in the paragraph starting the Chasan Bini, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth paragraph in the bold. So he says that my son-in-law showed me the son-in-law of my son showed me a Rashba in Shuvas, the Rashba in Shuvas in Chilak Aleph, where he specifically, explicitly says the Chilak, the distinction that Rav Tzvi Pesach wants to make himself, which is the following. What does the Isser of Lo Savi mean to you? Let's say it literally means bringing in. What does it mean?
Just
don't bring it in. Exactly. You yourself, don't bring it in. What happened here? He walked in himself. And by the way, based on the Shaila, he wasn't invited. He walked in himself. He wanted to see what a shul looked like. He wanted to check it out. This is a bigger issue because I think that they used to invite them. But the reason they used to come up in Yeshiva University is because the way Rav Schechter tells the story, I mean, I wasn't there, it was before my time, but the Christian, the church, they wanted to understand what works about Yiddishkeit. So they would, they had a deal with, I think, with Dr. Lamb, I think. They had a deal where they would come to check out the yeshiva and they would inspect the yeshiva and see what's working in yeshiva, what's clicking, and they wanted to mimic things because they felt there was a struggle to keep the church alive. People weren't so interested in Avodah Zarah. So, Rav Schechter said on one of the trips, Rav Schechter said that they figured out what the chap is. They figured out what it is. The issue is that in the church, everyone's just being taught, and if you want to be a priest, you go to priest school, but otherwise there's no real like forum for education. The chavrusa system is why Yiddishkeit survives. They came to the Beis Medrash, that's what we need. We need more chavrusas. So Rav Schechter said they didn't realize, no, the reason that their Avodah Zarah doesn't survive is because it's sheker. Sheker doesn't survive. It has nothing to do with chavrusas. You can have chavrusas and sheker, it still would fall apart. It's not a real religion, so of course it's going to fall apart. But they used to come into the Beis Medrash, into the shuls, to see what Yiddishkeit was all about. And you basically had this shaila. So if they were just coming uninvited, so Rav Tzvi Pesach is saying that's not as much of an issue. Secondly, and this is related to what Matt said, he says it's even better here. Why? It's even better here because it's derech arai. It's very temporary. Lo sabi toeva el besecha means, the way I said it before, maybe a little bit loosely, but the way I said it before was incorporating into your home. So it doesn't mean you have to worship it, even if you don't worship it, but bring it into your home in a more set manner. If someone passes through your shul and he's wearing a cross on his neck, that's not lo sabi toeva el besecha. That's that he passed through. It wasn't brought into your home. It just happened to go in and out. It wasn't in any real form or fashion. It's less than Rachel. He was not trying to destroy it in the shul, but it's not really part of the shul. It's not being planted in the shul in any real way. So that's not going to be an issue of lo sabi toeva el beisecha. So the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank here says that he thinks there is at least an Isser Darabanan, potentially. At least an Isser Darabanan. Based on Rishonim, he quotes Aran like this. At least an Isser Darabanan for someone to come into the shul uninvited for you to leave them there. Okay, that could be an Isser Darabanan, but since it's really such a temporary fashion, for sure it's even mutter midarabanan. It's even permissible midarabanan. Now, he's not certain about all this, but he thinks that if you put everything together, again, it's a very temporary fashion, and you're not the one bringing it in. The guy comes in on his own accord, on his own volition, so because of that, he doesn't think there's a technical, strictly speaking, Isser, definitely daraisa, and even darabanan, of lo sabi toeva el beisecha. Okay, what are we left with, though? What is an issue, according to this? Hana for sure, but what's an issue in terms of Losavi?
Inviting
him, right? Inviting him, telling him to come in, because maybe then you're directly causing him to come to the shul. That would be a hava. That would be bringing the Avodah Zarah into the home. So we still have to talk about the two other problems. Losavi, Toeva, what's considered Toeva? El Beisecha, what's considered Beisecha, what's considered house? So let's talk about Toeva, which is really the first thing In the second paragraph here, Barishona underlined. Yeah.
You don't know what they're going to necessarily, if they're going to be wearing. Like, if you might, like, they have a necklace that...
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. We're talking about a priest. I think a priest, part of the... part of the lavush, part of the uniform, is the cross they wear on their neck.
This is not good, but I was thinking the same thing that I would ask. I mean, people have jewelry. You could have an employee come and
right.
They could have a tattoo, and
you don't even know about it. No, so that we can't be talking about that. If you don't know, you don't know.
But I mean,
and even if it's a suffik, if it's daraisa, it'll be a suffik daraisa l'chumra. But if we've broken this down to a darabanan already, then it could be a suffik darabanan l'kula. But I don't think that when a guy comes in, you say, "I'm sorry, but we just have to check you for tattoos for sure." Now that's really weird. But even for jewelry, what? Now, so let's talk about tzeiva. Yeah.
You know, a crucifix, like they have
a model of a human. I understood, right.
Question,
then we'll talk about it in Bli Nether. So if you look again in the first source, in the first part of the source, what Ritzvi Pesach Ring talks about is Yesh Levar, we have to clarify here, Bitsuras Shesi Be'erev, this depiction, this cross, jewelry, necklace, I don't know, sometimes they carry one. I don't know what that's about. But whatever, this cross depiction, Hatali B'tzavar, that they wear on their neck, Shal HaKomrim, the priest, Im Yesh Lo Din Avodah Zarah. Does that actually have a din? Does that actually have a status of Avodah Zarah? What would you say?
I'd say it depends.
On what?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, I've heard that there's a question today. I'm going to post
it. Yeah.
Whether Christianity is for the...
Let's say Christianity is Avodah Zarah. Let's assume it is absolutely Avodah Zarah.
So then it wouldn't just be a cross. They have rosary beads, right? They do all kinds of things. They have all sorts of paraphernalia.
I haven't tried it out yet. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I mean,
it
could be a tachshit. Oh, so we'll have to talk about that. Meaning, what do you mean by tachshit? Tachshit literally means jewelry, right?
It's an accessory.
What's that?
It's an accessory. Yeah, that's what it
and not? And not Avodah Zarah. So let's talk about that for a second. So the truth is that this used to be a bigger shaila, not in terms of what we're talking about, but this used to be a very big shaila, because I think this is historically true. My only real source for this is what's his name? Karl Reiner's 2000-year-old man. What was the guy who did it with? The Jewish guy?
Mel Brooks.
I always get confused between Mel Brooks and Mel Gibson, but I never want to say it out loud, because one's like really evil and the other one's just like a funny guy. So Mel Brooks.
Because
Gibson could be a Jewish name. It wouldn't be crazy. That's what I'm saying, but like the names throw me off. So he's also an anti-Semite. But it would be shy. Didn't he have a movie about a cross? Wasn't he Yashka in one of these movies? Okay, so it really would have worked in this context anyways. But anyway, so Karl Reiner and Mel Brooks have a 2,000-year-old man. So they say there that I think Mel Brooks, when he was younger for a 2,000-year-old man, he might have been 1,000, I don't know. But he was in the cross business. Anyone remember this shtick? Anyone listen to the... What? I guess I'm the oldest person in the room, probably. No one else here has heard it. But he used to be in the cross business. He says that he used to be that he was in the Magen David business, the Jewish stars. But the way the Jewish star worked is that there was no factories back then. So they had to have two guys standing with one triangle, another guy standing with another triangle, and they would run into each other, and it would fuse together. But the triangles were so pointed, they had a lot of work accidents. So it was much more convenient to be in the cross industry, less of an issue, less points, less than the triangle. So it's true, though, historically, Jews actually used to be in the business of selling crosses. They say a story, it's apocryphal, but we'll change the name of the apocryphal person anyways just to save his anonymity. So his name was Yankel. Yankel was a yeshiva bacher, a younger man, and he was having trouble making a parnasa in the kollel, so his uncle invited him to join the family business. The family business was selling crosses. So they would sell crosses to Christians. So Yankel tried his hardest to avoid it. He didn't want to be in the business of selling crosses, disgusting. But eventually he realized the Parnassa was necessary. He was dejected. He was hurt. He was downtrodden. But he had to go work in the business. So his first day on the job, he's told he has to make an order for 100 crosses. He has to call the company to order 100 crosses. So he's sad. He's nervous. He's uncomfortable. He's shaking. He lifts the phone. And he hears a voice on the other line. "Hello, this is Chris's Christian Crosses or whatever. Can I help you?" So Yankel puts on his most waspy, guyish, voice, and he says, "Hi, I'd like to order 100 crosses, please." So the other person on the other line says, "Sure. Mit Yashka Adar Anyashka?" So that's what they say. They say the Jews used to be the Jews. Anyone who didn't understand, it means with Yashka on it or without Yashka on it. You want a plain cross or with Yashka? So. Is it mutter? Is that really mutter to sell crosses? The Jews really were in the business. Is that a mutter enterprise? So the Sefer Chasidim notes that it's certainly within the parameters of the Lo Sasev, Lo Savi Toev, Lo Besapa. This is your whole business, your whole enterprise, everything you make your panas on is selling Avodah Zarah practices. That doesn't seem appropriate. And the truth is, he says further that even if you do it, you're not going to see any siman bracha. It's not going to work. You're not going to make a parnasa that way. I don't know the end of the story with the uncle. Maybe he didn't make a parnasa. I don't know. But it's going to be an issue for you in terms of parnasa anyways. You're not going to benefit from such a practice. That being said, if you look in the sources in the first paragraph over here, so the Rosi Pesach quotes the Ramah. The Ramah Yerodea in Simkuf Mem Aleph very famously says that the crosses which the non-Jews, the Christians, wear around their necks nowadays are not really worn as an idol. Like we heard from some people in the crowd before, they wear them as a, I don't know, like a mark of identification. An accessory was one word we used. It's an ID card to show I'm part of the faith, I'm part of the Christian nation. Nobody worships their necklaces. The Shach, in his commentary here on Shulchan Aruch, in Yerodea, so he throws a little bit of a wrench in theory. In practice, it's not an issue, but in theory, he throws a wrench into this whole discussion. He says you can only say this leniency, this kula of the Ramah, if you know for sure that they are not worshiping that necklace. They know for sure that they don't worship the Abodah Zarah. But if you have a suffix, if you're not sure about whether they do or don't, what do you have to assume? You have to be machmir. Why? Suffix de'araisa l'chumra. This is an issue of a de'araisa of lo savi to'eva be'secha, or whatever the iser might be in terms of Abodah Zarah, getting benefit, etc. So if you're mesupak, you're not sure, you're unclear on whether these people worship their Abodah Zarah necklace, then you have to be stringent, misafik. That being said, some of the poskim note that the Ramaz Metzias, his reality, the way he defined it, and the way the Shach described it as a suffix, it's not really the reality anymore. The Avni Nezer has a tshuva where he points out that the Gayim, the Akums, the non-Jews who are idolatrous, they wear their necklaces all the time. They wear their necklaces in the shower. They wear their necklaces when they're in the bathroom. Nobody here would take a sitter or a chumash into the shower with them. That's crazy. Because holy objects stay outside of the restroom. You don't treat your worshipped objects that way. They wear it as a decoration, they wear it as an identification marker, they wear it because they want to show that they're different than other people. That's why they wear it, just as a decorative accessory. But it's not really worshipped in any way as an Abodah Zarah. I have heard in the past, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that there are some, I'm not sure if it's Mexican or South American in general, that are more Fabrenta Christians that actually worship the cross. I have no idea if that's true or not. I've heard that it's worth looking into. I don't remember if this is Mexico or South America, but that people worship the cross much more religiously. Why would that ever come up? It only would come up in the following case, which is the context that I heard it in. Let's say you have some non-Jewish help in the home, a babysitter or a maid or something like that, a house cleaner, and sometimes you have a live-in. Sometimes you have a live-in house cleaner. So let's say she's going to live in your guest room, in your basement, something like that. So if she's bringing in crosses, so until now we're saying maybe a cross is an Abodah Zarah, but if she's from these places where apparently, if it's true, they really do worship the cross, the Shasi Be'er, if they really do worship it, then you have a real issue of Lo Savi To'eva El Be'secha. We can't debate whether your house is Be'secha. Your house is certainly Be'secha. You're certainly inviting her to sleep there, and it's certainly Abodah Zarah. That could be a major issue. I don't know if anyone here is a Buddhist housekeeper ever, but that would also be an issue, right? Because I think they do worship the... That's the overweight, they do worship him, right? They do stuff for him. So if they brought that into your home, okay, that could definitely be an issue. But generally speaking, the post can talk about this. They think Me'ikar Adin, strictly speaking, the cross is not actually an Avodah Zarah. That being said, some of the later tshuvas you have in 1982, a tshuva from the Kleisenberg Rebbe, the Divrei Yatziv, he writes that, strictly speaking, again, it's not really a shame of Avodah Zarah because of this, because they don't worship it, but it's not a good business for a Jewish. This in Rabbanus is not something a Jewish boy should go into. It's not a kosher job for a Jewish boy to go into, selling crosses. The Chalkas Yaakov has a tshuva like that in Yerodea Simenon Hay as well, where they recommend against the practice, even if you don't think that it's really Avodah Zarah. They also note that it is true that some people might worship Avodah Zarah. I'm not sure if that's true. But it might be true that some people worship Avodah Zarah, in which case you do always have a suffix according to the Shach. So they recommend against this entirely. There's a story in one of the biographies, I think it was the Artscroll biography, although I don't remember now, but I read it when he passed away, I guess 7 years ago or 8 years ago. When Rav Avadia Yosef passed away, they put out a few biographies, but one of them I think was the Artscroll one. So he said there were some problems in the Yosef household, in his family house. Somebody was sick, somebody broke their leg, things were going on. So what's the obvious halachic solution to issues in your life ever? Check the mezuzahs. Very good. Okay, everyone here is a halachic Jew. Good, you know the reality. Okay. So obviously there's something wrong with them. So the family said, can we check the mezuzahs? So Rav Yosef was, I guess he wasn't so firm. So he said, what do you check the mezuzahs for? Like, you do tshuva and learn more Torah and go to the doctor and you'll get better. Like, they said, we really want to check the mezuzahs. He said, fine. So he let a mekubal come to the home. So this mekubal came to the home to check the mezuzahs. And he found some issues with different mezuzahs. This one had an issue with the writing, this one had an issue with the placement, this one had an issue with this, that. So he said, you got to fix a few things. So Rav said, okay, fine, thank you. And as he's leaving, the guy said, by the way, another thing I get a sense, is there a cross in your house? That's what the Mekubal asked Rav Avadya. So Rav Avadya said, indeed, there is a cross in the house. Why? Because he said one time he had some correspondence, something or other, with the King of Spain. And the King of Spain gave him some emblem, some I think maybe a necklace, some sort of a jewelry or something that had the emblem of Spain on it, which includes a cross. Maybe it was the emblem of the church, I don't know, but it had a cross on it, and that sits in the house upstairs in my office. I don't think Rav Avadya wore it out to parties, but he had it in the home. So yeah, there's something that has this, the tzura of a cross in the home. So the Mekubal said, ah, that's your issue. Get rid of that, and everything will be better. So Rav Avadya said, thank you so much, you know, have a good day. When the guy left, Rav Avadya told him to put the mezuzahs all back up. They're completely kosher. So he said, how do you know they're kosher? The guy just looked and saw that they're psulim. So he said, I know this guy was not Maaretz. I know he doesn't know anything about learning. Why? Because I wrote a tshuva about this. You'll see it. I wrote a tshuva about this. It's totally mutter for me to hold on to that cross. This cross, he makes the argument based on our Ramah, that this cross is not an Avodah Zarah. It's not an object of Avodah Zarah. Even the Shach would agree because nobody worships a medal of honor. Nobody worships the medal of honor in Spain. Even if you think that crosses somehow get worshipped in any situation, the emblem that he gave me to celebrate my honor in the Kingdom of Spain is certainly not a chefs of Avodah Zarah. This guy doesn't know how to learn. If he doesn't know how to learn, he can't pass the mezuzahs either. So he kicked him out of the house. He told the family, don't listen to anything he said. So that's part of what we're talking about over here, that the cross, strictly speaking, is not an Avodah Zarah in the first place. And even if it is, it matters in the context. No one's worshipping a medal of honor, Rav Avadya pointed out. Yeah, it comes up in other cases also. Doctors sometimes have to wear outfits that have crosses on them. We're really all graduating people. I know my brother went to St. John's Law School. So I think their gown had a cross on it. That's their logo.
Their graduate certificates, this one friend of mine, the wife of a 401 member, she refused the certificate because...
Also had a cross, right? So okay, so it comes up. So the post can really are makel on this. Again, if you could avoid it, who wants to wear a cross? You don't want to wear a cross. But if you could avoid it, that's great. But strictly speaking, we can assume in most cases that the cross is not a chetz of Avodah Zarah. Christianity is Avodah Zarah, but they don't worship the cross. That's not how their Christianity works. I've spoken to Rav Shechter Shlita from YU about, my Rebbe, about this topic in the past in terms of halach l'maisa shaylas that have come up. None of the ones that we discussed just now, but other shaylas. And he seemed to assume halach l'maisa, straight, practical speaking, that a cross is not considered a chetz of Avodah Zarah, that we assume like those poskim, and therefore it's not an issue. So
does it matter whether it's got the
no, it doesn't matter. They don't, even if he's hanging out on there, they don't worship it.
Okay.
They don't worship it.
Right.
They worship the idea. Right. No, it's not for us to have. Right. So you don't need to burn it. Yeah. So even if we get through all of this, again, we said that maybe there's an Isser of Lo Savi to invite the priest into the shul. And we said the cross, if they worship it, if they don't worship it, it's going to depend. But nobody wants it in your house. Nobody wants it in the shul. Nobody wants to wear it. Even if we get through all of that, we have one more consideration that might knock everything out from under us. In source Gimel, on the bottom of the first page, the third to last paragraph, Rav Tzipesach considers, is this really considered Beis Secha? Is a shul considered your house? Can anyone think of a precedent in Halacha where a shul is or is not considered a bias? Or, interesting, but not what I'm thinking of. Interesting, but also not what I'm thinking of. That's more of a din in Beis Din, not a din in bias. What mitzvahs in the Torah have to do with a house where the Torah says a bias?
Mezuzah.
Good, mezuzah. Do shuls need mezuzahs?
Yeah.
Shuls have mezuzahs, and some of you might have sponsored them for $1,000 in any given shul, but you might want your money back. Because, technically speaking, no, it's good to donate to a shul anyway. Or a kolo, by the way. It's also good to donate to kolo. So it's we do put up mezuzahs in the shul. They're largely symbolic. Because a shul is, technically speaking, putter from mezuzah. Why? Very good. When there was a room where people slept in. That's relevant to Bedikas Chametz. That's relevant to Bedikas Chametz. It's also, right, it's also potentially relevant to the sleeping room. Correct. Correct. So let's just talk about the sanctuary for now. Between me and you, I've fallen asleep during Kriyas Shema also, but it's not a place you're supposed to fall asleep. You're not supposed to fall asleep there. People think I'm from because I say Kriyas Shema like four times every morning. It's because I fall asleep halfway through every time. I have no idea where I'm up to. I start again. It's not a from thing. So let's say the shul. So if you look in the Gemara in Yuman Yud Aleph, Rav Tzipesach friend quotes this. It's nothing new for me. In source Gimel, you have it over here. He quotes the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma in Yud Aleph says that a shul, the halachos of mezuzah, we spoke about last time, we spoke about the halachos of Sefer Torah, mezuzah, tefillin, all of those writing halachos are really found in Meseches. Menachos, one of the in Seder Kachim. Meseches Yuma is about... Yeah, I have a friend who teaches in a high school, so he was teaching a I think it was girls class in the high school, And he said, what's Maseches Yuma about? And nobody knew. So he said, it's Yuma means day. What's the holiest day of the year? And one of them, oh, Yom Ha'atzmaut. He's like, yes, but that's not what the Gemara is about. Like, what are you supposed to say? No, it's Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is what Yuma is about. Correct. So Maseches Yuma, or some people pronounce it Yoma. So the Gemara there says that unless the shul contains within it, like Johnny just pointed out, a shul within which people sleep, within which people reside. It used to be poor people slept in the shul. So you don't need a mezuzah in the shul because it's not a beis dira. It's not a house that you live in. It's a house that you daven in. It's not a house that you live in. Another halacha which we're less familiar with is the Gemara in Chulan on Kuf Lamed Vav. The Gemara there says that the halacha of ma'akeh, or as people from other worlds call it ma'akeh, but it's a ma'akeh, which is a fence. Where do you have to put a fence in halacha? A roof. Okay, so if a person wants to go, has a roof that's accessible, and therefore there's a concern, it doesn't really have to be so high in halacha. It has to be very, very small off the ground. But you have a surface that we're concerned people can fall off of and get hurt or die. So we have to put a fence, a ma'aka, around the roof, a ma'aka around the roof. In both cases, the Gemara says that doesn't apply to a shul. That doesn't apply to a shul. The drasha is similar in both cases. Uchsavtam al mizuzos beisecha. Beisecha and a shul is not beisecha. It's not your home. You don't live there. Maka, the asisa maka, ligagecha, to your roof, gagecha, and not a gag shall beis haknesses, because the beis haknesses is not your house, and therefore it's not your roof. Based on that, Tzvi Pesach suggests, he argues, that perhaps the whole isser of lo savi toeva beisecha, even if it's lo savi, and even if it's a toeva, it's not beisecha. It's not your house. It's a shul. So to let the non-Jewish priest come into the shul with a cross on him, even if you assume the other issues, he's not in your house. It's not an issue. It is interesting to note, you'll see why in a second, it's interesting to note that there's a dispute amongst the Rishonim as to the reason a shul is accepted, is exempted from mezuzah. The first reason is what we pointed out before, which is what Rashi says in the Masechta over there. Rashi says the reason is because nobody sleeps there. Rashi says it a little different, even differently than that. Rashi says there's no individual owners of the shul. There's no ownership of the shul. The community owns the shul as a whole, but the shul itself is not really owned by any individual person. So it can't be beisecha, it can't be a house, it can't be your house. It's not under anyone's real ownership. The Rambam in Hilchos Mezuzah says a different reason entirely. He says that beisecha is limited to your house, meaning a house that's mundane, regular, an ordinary house. But a bayis shel hektish, like a beis hamikdash, like a lishka in the beis hamikdash, like an area that has kedusha, and, for example, bate knesios, says the Rambam, that's going to be exempt from mezuzah, not because no one owns it, but because it's holy, and the holy house was never included in the mitzvah. The mitzvah is beisecha, your house that's usable by you, but a bayis shel hektish, a bayis that's kedusha, that's not included in the mitzvah mezuzah, and that includes a beis hakneses as well. That's what the Rambam says. Now, it's interesting, the Chassam Sofer has a little bit about this. The Tzvi Pesach Frank makes it a little clearer. If you just turn the page to page number 2, you could see it in the top paragraph there where it starts with a Yud Beis. Yeah, you could see it there. So the what would you think? Let's say, now we've said that the shul is not considered a house for mezuzah. Why? Either because it's ownerless or because it's holy and a holy place doesn't need a mezuzah. Because the Torah says beisecha, not a house that's holy. Good? Okay. If the shul is an ownerless entity, does that change the halacha in terms of bringing in the cross? Answer, yeah. Meaning, here too, it's not beisecha. Lo savi to'eva el beisecha, your house. Okay, so let's follow that line of reasoning. The Rambam says the reason is because a house is ordinary and a shul is holy, so it's pater from mezuzah. And therefore, it's not included in beisecha in the pasuk. Okay, so the pasuk says, lo savi to'eva el beisecha. Is a shul beisecha? Even according to the Rambam, if not. Why? Because the Shechina resides there, because it's holy. Now listen to my sentence. Since the shul is so holy and sanctified, and the Shechina is there, therefore it's fine to bring Avodah Zarah inside. Does that make any sense to you? So some want to argue, if Tzvi Pesach Frank makes this argument, that for Rashi, the reason carries over. For the Rambam, technically the reason carries over, but it becomes a funny thing. Because now the holiest place that's pater from mezuzah, because it's so holy, so it's not your house, so therefore there's a heter, there's license to bring Avodah Zarah into there, that's hard to swallow. So Tzvi Pesach Frank says, even if it's true that strictly speaking we can get a p'tur, it's not beisecha, but there's something that really goes against the logic and the heart over here in terms of bringing Avodah Zarah into the shul. And because of that, Tzvi Pesach Frank says as follows. Technically speaking, in our case, where a non-Jew, a priest, a galach, is not invited but enters of his own volition into a shul, we don't have to kick them out, especially in a case where we're worried that it'll cause hate and therefore pogrom or even just anti-Semitism in some way towards us. So we don't have to be concerned about the Isser of Lo Savi Toeva Beisecha in such an instance. because technically speaking, it's not a toeva. Technically speaking, it's not hava'a, because you didn't invite him in. And technically speaking, it's not beisecha. Okay. It still is a holy place. Who would want to cross in there? And therefore, a person should avoid it at all costs, which means that a person should not be inviting the galach into the shul. That does happen. I've heard of cases in regular times where a galach, a priest, comes to a shul to speak. The only time that I was never in the room, but I heard about it happening in a shul that I lived near. They asked him to remove his I don't know what you call it, minister's garb, the collar and everything he was wearing. It wasn't offensive to him. He was coming into a shul of another religion. He was obviously an open-minded priest. He was coming to speak in a shul about, I think he was speaking about maybe saving Jews in Europe. There's some priest who goes around doing this, something special, like he's doing a good thing, and he was speaking in the shul. So he was happy to remove all of his garb. But if the person comes in wearing a gechka, so technically speaking, it might not be lo sabi toevo besecha, but if you invite him in, Rav Tzvi Pesach is much more nervous about that, especially because it's a holy place of the Shechina, it's not the right place to do it, but even technically speaking, it might become an isser of lo sabi toevo el besecha. So that's Rav Tzvi Pesach's tshuva here about this topic. Very organized, very labedik, very organized. Each issue broken down into its parts, and then explained in terms of the Rishonim, and then passing in the Halach Lamaisa on what the proper practice is. We'll do quickly, we don't have that much time, but we'll try quickly to cover the second shuva on the sheet. We're not going to go for the third, we'll try to cover the second one, though. Page number 2, you have over here a Shaila.
It's sort of off topic, it's on topic. I mean, does it mean physically? Because what if you bring a discussion online into your home with respect to
right.
something like that?
Yeah, technically, it means literally. Not bring a Buddhist into your home. Of course, there's a message and there's a mussar about this, which is that you don't want to bring the ideas of Vodzar into your home. The Torah says, Shaketz teshaketzenu. We're supposed to be so repulsed, so disgusted by Vodzar that we wouldn't want to be within Dalat Amos of it. But technically speaking, the Isser we're talking about is bringing a literal Vodzar into your home. Some of the posts can do expand it, by the way. The Chavetz Chaim famously writes in one of his kuntras, I forget which one, he writes that bringing newspapers into the home is also an Isser of Lo Savi Toev El Beisecha. Rav Avad Yosef has a tshuva where he says bringing TVs into the home is Lo Savi Toev El Beisecha. He didn't write about Netflix, so I assume that's mutter. But TVs he thought was Lo Savi Toev El Beisecha. Anything abominable, anything disgusting, anything that doesn't fit with the Jewish religion shouldn't be allowed in the home. It's a bad influence on us.
Can I have a question?
Yeah.
Is that why we're not allowed to go into churches and admire?
Maybe. There's other reasons as well. It's tricky whether looking at something is considered hana. The Gemara in Pesachim implies that kol mara and reach, hearing, seeing, and smelling are not considered hana, strictly speaking. The basic reason would be because they're very intangible. Very intangible. You see something, you smell something, you hear something. It's not you don't feel it in a physical sense. But there are other issues with going into a church as well. Yeah. The Pasuk in Parshas Shoftim tells us, we're moving into the second shuvah over here, we'll try to discuss it briefly outside. The Pasuk in Parshas Shoftim tells us, "Losita lecha asherah kol etz etzel mizbach Hashem elkecha asher tasa lach." You can't plant any trees. Asherah means a tree, but literally speaking, what's an asherah? An avodah zarah tree. Okay, an avodah zarah tree. Where etzel mizbach Hashem elkecha? You can't plant it near the mizbeach of Hashem, your God. You can't plant a tree, an asherah tree, near Hashem's mizbeach. So the Rashi there in his commentary on the Torah says that losita lecha asherah. It means, first of all, just planting it, even if you don't worship it, is already an issue. Losita, don't plant the tree. Even if you're not worshiping it, it's a problem. Secondly, a tree that they worshiped. That's it. Meaning there was a practice back in the day of Asherah. I don't know if it still exists. I don't know if people... There is some religion out there that still worships trees. Because I know there was a Shiloh a few years ago in camp about somebody bought a house and he bought it from some non-Jew. And the neighbor said, just so you know, before you move in, this tree in the front, this guy used to come every day, take his shoes off, and like bow down and give fruits to the tree or something like that. Like Mamash was worshiping the tree. So they had a whole, you're supposed to destroy an Asherah tree, the Torah says. So they had this whole ceremony in the camp. They brought the roots of the tree and they burnt it with acid. Very, very fun for them. So, not for the tree. So that's what the Torah says here. You can't even plant it. Rashi adds also, Azhar lenoteya ilan ulevone bayis behara bayis. It's not only an Asherah tree, but really any tree at all is not allowed to be on the hara bayis, or at least in the mikdash itself. Near the mikdash itself. You're not allowed to have any sort of tree, never mind if it's a worship tree or not a worship tree. Basically, the Gemara's learn out from here. We're streamlining a little bit, but basically the Gemara's learn out from here that really any tree and any wooden structure is not allowed to be in the near vicinity adjacent to the Beis HaMikdash, and it's all because of this issue of Losita Lecha Asherah. You're not literally planting an Asherah tree, but what the Chazal clearly saw, the Sifsei Chachamim spells this out in his super commentary on Rashi's explanation here. What the Chachamim saw is the following. Let me ask you a question. Before you heard this pasuk, why can't you plant an Asherah tree? What iser is that? Avodah Zarah. What's the Torah telling me again? Don't plant it. Let me ask you a question. The Torah says, don't plant an Asherah tree near the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. I'll plant it in my backyard. That's okay? Of course not. So the Torah is clearly coming to add, and the Torah says, kol eitz afterwards also. The Torah is clearly coming to add something more here. It didn't only mean planting and worshiping an Avodah Zarah in the vicinity of the Beis HaMikdash. It meant any tree and any wooden structure for that matter. The truth is, there's a very fascinating discussion in the Mefarshim. Mefarshim Chumash talk about this. There's a Yalkut who talks about it, but they quote it. Is where did the Kohanim eat their karbanos on Sukkot? So meat is allowed to be eaten outside the Sukkah, let's say. But some of the karbanos were bread, were menachos. Some of the kachik kadashim were bread. So they built a Sukkah in the Mikdash, right? What's the issue?
Building a wooden structure
in the Beis HaMikdash. Is that building a wooden structure in the Beis HaMikdash? What? Yeah, they probably had one of those. You're right. They probably had the Chabad drove in on a truck and put the... So what do they do? Where do they eat their karbanos? So the truth is, for a lot of the karbanos, it's not an issue because kachem kalim, let's say like the lachme toda, you don't have to eat in the mikdash. You can eat in all of Yerushalayim. So you could leave the Beis HaMikdash and go make a sukkah outside in Yerushalayim, as long as you're in Yerushalayim, and that's okay. But for menachos that were kachem kadashim, assuming you have to eat it in a sukkah, how did they accomplish that? So there are multiple answers. Either you didn't have to eat those in a sukkah because of some xeris hakasav, or you're able to construct the sukkah in such a way. You were joking about a pop-up, but really, you could build a sukkah with stone walls, and then you lay a schach down on top. That is wood. That is eitz. But since it's lying sideways, it's not growing in the way of derech kedilah, so the post can assume that's not as much of an issue. Okay, it's a longer discussion, lebedik, not for now, but that comes out of our topic. Anyways, Ritzi Pesach Frank is dealing with a different shaila, which is the following. There's a shul that was situated in a certain street, and the street had, on the opposite side of the sidewalk, trees lining the whole sidewalk. And on this side of the street, they wanted to also plant trees to make it look, symmetrical. Yeah, I was going to say parallel. Symmetrical is good. Fine. They wanted to make it look symmetrical. So are they allowed to plant it on the block with the tree across the front of the sidewalk of the shul? Or is that considered losit al chashir or kol eitz? You can't put it near Mizbach Hashem al-Kecha, the shul, which represents the Beis HaMikdash nowadays. So we would have thought, Beis HaMikdash shul, come on. There's tons of literature about this. A Beis HaMikdash doesn't exist anymore. But a Beis HaMikdash Ma'at does exist. Our shuls are a Mikdash Ma'at. That is not just the drush that you hear when the rabbi wants you to clean the shul a little more. It's halacha l'maisa. There are a lot of details in the construction of a shul which mimic the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And the mitzvah d'oraisa, the Rambam seems to assume, of building a Beis HaMikdash applies to a shul as well. So there is a lot of carryover between a shul and a Beis HaMikdash. So certainly it's not a crazy jump. That being said, Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes from Rav David Arma on the Rambam, that this iser should apply to shuls as well, which means that you can't plant a tree in the area, in the vicinity adjacent to a shul nowadays. Other posts can discuss this, the Maram Shik and others. The Netziv, famously in his Chelek Beis of his Tshuvas Meshev Davar, famously said, Einan levados. We can't make up Isurim. The Torah said don't plant a tree next to the Mizbeach. You can't make up a new iser that it also applies to shuls. We don't have a Gemara like this. It also says kol eitz. Any tree, any wooden structure, you can't do so. Furthermore, the Netziv says, so what, I can't have a wooden shul? My shul, what are your benches upstairs made of in the shul? You can't have wood all over the shul? We never heard of such a thing. So, says the Netziv, the whole thing is a moot point. The truth is, Rav Shechter, Shlita, in his Sefer Eretz HaTzvi, has that in Brisk, the Baal HaBatim always wanted to plant trees in front of the shul because they wanted to decorate, they wanted to make it look nice. And the Rabbanim in Brisk always said, no, you can't do that. Until Reb Chaim Soloveitchik became the Rav of Brisk, we're used to Brisker Chumras, but Reb Chaim Soloveitchik had a Brisker Kula. He said, the whole Isser doesn't apply. It's a shul. It doesn't exist. It's in the courtyard. It's not really in the shul. It's not a problem. And therefore, Reb Chaim was makel on this, and the Netziv, as we said before, was makel as well. So Reb Tzipesa Frank here, Paskin's Lekula in our case as well, but it's interesting. He says, it's certainly permissible to plant the trees outside of the shul on that sidewalk to be symmetrical to across the street. Why? He says, the reason is, you'll look inside, we just don't have time. The reason is because in this case, everyone knows that these trees are just for decoration. It doesn't smack of Avodah Zarah. It doesn't feel like Avodah Zarah. It doesn't look like Avodah Zarah. It doesn't look like you're mimicking churches. It's because the other side of the street has trees, so you're putting trees. So you're allowed to put it on the sidewalk outside of the shul. What does it sound like? In a different case, let's say you have a shul that's not across the street from trees, and you want to put in the courtyard of the shul, you want to plant some trees. Would you be allowed to do that according to Tzivas HaFrank? No. In this context, he was makel, because it was clear to everyone that it's just for decorative purposes from across the street. But otherwise, it wouldn't be allowed. So Rav Eliezer Waldenberg in his Tshuva Stitz Eliezer in Chilik Adalid, he points this out. He says clearly Rav Tzipa Safrank would be machmir, would be stringent, if you didn't have the license of doing so because it was clear in the context that it wasn't for Avodah Zarah purposes. Rav Adi Yosef has a short tshuva about this in Yabi Omer Chilak Tassin Arachayim, where he discusses all of Sri Pesach Frank's Makoros, etc. But then he quotes a whole slew of Acharonim, a whole slew of postmen, and say the whole Isser doesn't apply. The Netziv, the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, he quotes the Kajagol Ragon in Eretz Tzvi. He quotes a whole bunch of Acharonim who say that the whole Isser doesn't apply to a shul. Even if it applies to a shul, it doesn't apply to the courtyard of a shul, and certainly not nowadays, and certainly not when the context proves it. And he thinks it's permissible. I don't know if there's a minhag. I don't know if you have trees in your shul. Also, if you didn't plant them, you don't have to necessarily tear them out. That's a discussion in the postgame. So, based on all of this, Rav Adi Yosef is mekel, and based on a lot of other Maror Makomos as well. But I don't know if there's a minhag or not a minhag. If you inherited trees, do you have to tear them up? Most of the postgame assume you don't have to. Some say you do, but most of them say you don't have to. Importantly, we know there's a minhag on Shavuos to do what? You decorate the shul with flowers, grass, trees, things like that. So there the post can talk about this issue, along with the issue of Chukas Akum, of decorating a shul with flowers and the plants and trees. We don't have time to get into it now, but Rav Adi Yosef garners proof from the Mishnah Berurah there, who says you're allowed to plant trees or put trees into the shul on Shavuos to commemorate the fact that it's Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. On Shavuos, you can put trees into the shul. Obviously, the issue doesn't apply la'halacha, and therefore, Rav Tzvi Frank is makel in his case, but would be machmer in other cases, and Rav Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, would be machmer in that as well. But Rav Adi Yosef, the Kajagla Vergon, the Binyan Sion, the Meshav Davar, the Netziv, all of them would be makel on this, and therefore, you do find the shuls that have trees in the vicinity, and we don't assume that that's strictly speaking an Isser, Daraisa, or Darabban necessarily. Okay, we'll stop here, and Blineder Mitzvah will continue in 2 weeks. Everyone have a wonderful day.